From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today on Deadline is looking at the economic plan put forth by Vice President and newly minted Democratic presidential nominee, Kamala Harris. Since being supported by the major players of the Democratic Party as the successor to President Joe Biden, Harris has ridden a wave of popularity to the Democratic National Convention this week. She selected her vice presidential running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, and now the pair is getting down to the nitty-gritty, defining their policies and what sets them apart from the GOP contender, former President Donald Trump. Harris started by revealing a plan for what she wants to do with the economy last Friday. That plan has received mixed reviews. While Democrats supported her calls to end price gouging on groceries, help working parents with daycare expenses through child tax credits, and to provide first-time homebuyers with $25,000 in down payment assistance, others have been critical. Trump, for instance, referred to the plan as one from, quote, the old Soviet Union. After causing catastrophic inflation, Comrade Kamala announced that she wants to institute socialist price controls. That's what Trump said at a rally last weekend in Pennsylvania. Other criticisms Harris faced included questions about why she hasn't put this plan into action already, since she's part of the Biden White House. Political analyst David McQuan of Sonoma State joined Odyssey to share more on the reaction to Harris's populist agenda.
It parts in some ways from the Biden administration. In some ways, it aligns with it. But I think it's fair to say that many of the things that she is proposing tax certainly more to the left of the Democratic Party than Joe Biden did. Is that a fair assessment?
It is a fair assessment, and here's why. The policy proposals that Kamala Harris, the vice president, put forward today go farther. They deepen the party's transformation under Joe Biden. They move farther into a populist component, and they hit key voter segments. It's not just the demographics of the vote. It's changing the orientation of the Democratic Party, creating a different type of coalition. There are several reasons for this. You might argue that Kamala Harris is a different type of Democrat, someone who's been to the left of the party in many areas and many issues. Certainly her running mate, Tim Walz, has been there. And Joe Biden, in many ways, has been an establishment Democrat. Now, sure, Republicans would characterize him as someone left of center, but he's always been someone who's been squarely in the middle of the party on many, many issues. But if you look at this series of proposals, it is populist writ large. It is about prescription drugs. It is about home ownership. It's about families. It's targeting younger voters, households hit by medical debt. It is expansive. And to do that also in North Carolina, a state that's gone Democratic only once since Ronald Reagan was elected president, that was in 2008, is also a key element here. What you're seeing is a different Kamala Harris and a different type of Democrat in that short runway of an election that really is just around the corner.
Okay, but as you well know, making political promises to get elected and having those promises become reality are often two very different things. Are these proposals by the vice president messaging, political messaging, knowing full well that the odds of getting most, all, maybe none of this passed is close to zero? Or does she really think that this is going to work out?
This is squarely about political messaging. If you look at where some of the targets are of these messages, they involve younger voters or emerging voters, voters that are not habitual regular voters. That emerging electorate was lagging in influence and in motivation to participate when Joe Biden was a Democratic Party candidate. So you're looking to bring those voters out. That's about messaging. However, many of these initiatives are going to require a heavy lift by those members in the House and the Senate. So it also has messaging down ballot. We've seen a demise of what we call coattails, the ability of the president to bring along others in the party with him or her. But this is squarely a set of proposals that will rely on Chuck Schumer, on a heavy lift by Democrats if they were to retake the House by Hakeem Jeffries if he were to become the Speaker. And it would obviously face a lot of headwinds from Republicans, particularly in the Senate. But it will require down ballot success as well. That's something to pay attention to, because if Kamala Harris were to win the presidential election, like Joe Biden, her legislative success would have to come as much through Capitol Hill as through the White House. And that will be an important element of what comes next. That's a key element here. But you're absolutely correct. This is 80% about political messaging.
While Republican voices have been extremely critical of some of the proposals from Harris's team, those hearing these complaints have been left wondering if they're just political pandering or if they come from a place of genuine concern. Some good examples of the divide over Harris's plan actually come from a popular TV show. Kevin O'Leary is one of the main investors on the hit reality show Shark Tank. He gave an opinion to CNN last week where he said some of the ideas Harris has for the economy are really bad. O'Leary, a Canadian, claims to have no party affiliation. However, we should keep in mind that he ran to be the leader of the Conservative Party in Canada in 2017. He also recently defended Trump against a $355 million civil judgment for falsification of business records. Regarding his defense of Trump, O'Leary said it was a, quote, victimless crime and would turn New York into a flyover state. Getting back to O'Leary's comments about Harris's proposed agenda, the influential TV personality said it's, quote, not going to work, just like it didn't in, quote, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, or the USSR. Meanwhile, others have praised the policy proposition from Harris. And one of those people is O'Leary's fellow Shark Tank host, billionaire Mark Cuban. In fact, Cuban is one of 800 venture capitalists supporting the proposals from Harris, according to a report from Business Insider. Cuban, who's also known as the former majority owner of the Dallas Mavericks, has been defending Harris's proposals on social media, especially the $25,000 down payment assistance program. He said aid Americans would receive through the assistance could be make or break for many potential homebuyers. Richard Oxer, principal policy associate with the Tax Policy Center at the Urban Institute, joined Odyssey to give an outlook on what the future could hold under a Harris administration.
So how would this work differently from what we already know as the child tax credit?
Okay, so first of all, the child tax credit's gone through a lot of changes in recent years, but what it is in every year is a direct benefit to eligible parents with children. That went from like $1,000 up to $2,000 in 2017. Then it went up to $3,000 or more under the American Rescue Plan in 2021, and then it came back down to $2,000. And something to keep in mind for all of this, all the tax cuts passed in 2017 are about to expire. So there's a lot of room for whoever becomes president to maneuver and change taxes. And so Harris would significantly, she would go back to the levels during 2021, where roughly $3,000 or more for children, and then add a new $6,000 tax credit for parents with children who are younger than age one for newborns.
So there's always the perception issue of who's trying to help out business more, who's trying to help out the middle class more. So what would you say here as you compare what both candidates have said about what they'd like to do?
I think it's important to keep in mind with the child tax credit that a lot is going to be said about how this will benefit low-income families, and it will. I have not seen full details, but if this becomes fully refundable, currently you have to earn a certain amount of income to benefit from the child tax credit. And if they take that away, you would be helping a lot of low income families. But the child tax credit goes to families earning up to $200,000 or $4,000, depending on if they're married or not. So this would be a significant middle income tax cut, as well as a significant boost for low-income Americans. And that's very different. The CTC is very helpful because it's refundable, because it goes to people. And that's very different from the TIPS we're talking about, because that's only going to benefit people who earn enough money to benefit from that after all the other stuff, like the child tax credit, affects their tax bill.
Well, what do you make of the talk about the grocery price gouging?
So I am not an economist. I know a lot of economists are worried about this, but I would just say that, again, the actual details are going to matter. And what I think it's important for voters to keep in mind, because they're not going to be reading through these, is listening to candidates and what they prioritize. I mentioned that like a lot of the tax bill, the 2017 is going to go away. That doesn't mean you can do everything. This country still is running deficits. It has problems with Social Security and Medicare. And with all of this, it's important to keep in mind, what are the candidates proposing to do, and then what are they proposing to pay for it? Because if you're only proposing tax cuts, you probably can't do everything that the candidate is proposing, both tax cuts and tax increases. And similarly on price gouging, what does this specifically mean? Is this little limits or is these big limits? Keep in mind what they're doing and how it fits into broader economic problems.
Both Trump and Harris have said that they want to help Americans who are struggling financially. Frankly, they probably agree on that because it's the most crucial way to get votes. And both of these candidates see different paths to helping Americans, except for one proposition, the end to taxation on tips. Now, this proposal was first mentioned by Trump earlier this summer. Then Harris echoed the call to end taxation on tips this month. It might sound like a great idea, especially for anyone who's had to rely on tips to make rent. However, many experts have been critical about what an end to taxing tips could actually mean on a broader scale. To share more on this, James Hines Jr., a professor of law and economics and the research director of the Office of Tax Policy Research at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business, joined Odyssey.
Professor, maybe we should take a step back here. First of all, what are the current rules when it comes to taxes on tips?
Tips are treated the same as wage and salary income, and so it's subject to tax.
It's that simple. But is it likely a lot of people don't report their tips?
Of course, there's concern about that. I mean, there are people who don't report some of their wage and salary income too, you know. But yes, that's a big concern, especially back in the days when a lot of tips were cash payments. They were harder to enforce, obviously.
So what are your thoughts on the idea of eliminating taxes on tips? Is it a good idea or do you have some concerns?
I do have concerns and a lot of concerns. It creates a lot of problems and you got to ask yourself why you're doing it. The problems it creates are you suddenly have to distinguish tips from other forms of labor compensation. And that is a real mess because there are a lot of gray areas where, you know, it gets very hard to distinguish. Furthermore, whatever rules you write, taxpayers will have an incentive to try to change the way that they're paid by their employers in order to get the tax benefits. Look, even if people are perfectly compliant, 100% compliant, the workers and their employers. Workers are going to go to employers and say, come on, can you help us out by changing the nature of our compensation so that more of it comes in the form of tips relative to wage and salary? And the employers, if they care about their employees, will want to help them. And so you give everybody an incentive to do that. Some will do it. Others won't. The ones who won't because they can't or it's too hard or they don't care, you know, they're going to feel like chumps because the workers there are going to feel like chumps because they're overtaxed relative to other people.
So it'll bring up a big fairness issue at certain companies and businesses.
Of course it will. Because, look, a wage and salary income is also compensation for working. So why should that be taxed more heavily than other forms of compensation?
You mentioned earlier, Professor, gray areas. What do you foresee? You think some people maybe in high-paying jobs might claim, these wages technically are tips?
Of course. But I mean, it won't be only people in high-wage jobs. The worry is, you know, people in high-wage jobs, of course, are taxed more heavily, and they have higher wages. That's why we call them high-wage jobs. So there's more at risk for tax avoidance there. But really, it'll be everybody will have an incentive to do this. Not everybody can, of course. I mean, you know, you have a job at Walmart and the company pays you and, you know, you pay tax on it and your compensation really doesn't come in the form of tips typically. But a lot of other jobs, you might have the option. And by the way, I give Walmart credit. Maybe they'll figure out a way to recharacterize some of the compensation as tips.
So eliminating taxes on tips sounds like a great campaign promise to some people, but you would sounds like advise against it.
Look, if you want to cut taxes, and you don't care about deficits, apparently, then and you want to help low-wage workers. I understand why you might want to help low-wage workers, but there are a lot of other better ways to help them than the tip thing. You can lower tax rates at the bottom. You can increase credits or deductions. There are things you can do. The eliminating tips, you know, is a kind of fun soundbite, but I hope that whoever gets elected, either they drop this idea or Congress takes a more sensible approach to this problem.
While politicians and experts have shared their thoughts on Harris's economic efforts, what do voters think? According to the latest CBS News poll, Americans still think Trump is better suited to handle the economy, though Harris is doing 8 points better than Biden was on the issue back in June. When it comes down to how different genders see the issue, nearly half of women said they would vote for Harris based on her ability to better the economy. Just 37% of men said the same. Let's compare that to Trump, who had the support of a little bit more than half of women and 63% of men. Still, we should note that the next president will be chosen based on more than just their economic policies. We can't forget about abortion, international relations, wars, decisions about who serves on the Supreme Court, fights over the role of labor unions, gun rights, crime, violence, education. The list goes on, and I don't want to keep you here all day. But when it comes down to it, and I know you've all heard this before, but it's worth saying again, it's the economy, stupid. James Carville may have said it in the 90s, but research shows that that statement remains true today. For example, a recent poll conducted by The Economist and YouGov listed inflation, prices, and jobs in the economy as voters' top concerns. Another poll found that the economy was the top factor for 83% of potential voters. And while the current Biden-Harris administration has plenty to be proud about, including stock market records, strong GDP growth, and more, many Americans haven't felt these successes themselves. That's because inflation on housing, food, entertainment, construction projects, vehicles, and everything in between has really been putting stress on their wallets. A shopper wants his or her old price back. Jared Bernstein, the chair of President Biden's Council of Economic Advisors, explained that in a July speech. When it comes to the economy, the vibes are off, he said, adding that vibes matter. So, what are the vibes on Harris's new economic plan? It's up to America to decide. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.